Today is Tuesday, January 22nd, 2008, and I want to welcome everyone to the new season of Breaking Through, broadcast on georgianne.com. Archive shows are available 24 hours a day. Some of the past shows you may have missed that would be a great time to do it now that the cold weather is here. You can hear Rory Friedman, who is the co-author of the book Skinny Bitch, Susan Miller, who's a famed astrologer, Gabrielle, who is a fantastic spirit medium and author herself, and also there is the two-hour special with Daniel Brinkley. It was so compelling that Brian Flournoy, the radio show Making It All Click, sponsored this show. Thank you again, Brian. You're definitely my hero. And he has a fantastic show also. So if you have a chance to look at all his past shows and archive shows, you'll really appreciate the work he does. And I want to congratulate Daniel now that I'm speaking about him. He and his wife, Catherine Brinkley, who are just they're going to be republished. Harper One, a division of HarperCollins Publishing, is going to republish their new book, Secrets of the Light, and also Daniel's original book, Saved by the Light, so we want to congratulate him for that. And they were just in Sedona, Arizona, and I just received emails from some listeners that had the chance to meet him while they were there. And I keep his schedule on the homepage of georgianne.com. If he's ever in your area, make it a point to see him. And I hope everyone had a very happy holiday season. Outside of the usual holiday festivities, I managed to read a few books, one of which we're going to discuss this evening, which I'm really excited about. But since I haven't spoken to my audience in so long, I'm taking a few minutes just to catch everyone up. I also ordered The Future Map. If any of you recall, I had Gordon Michael Scallion was my very first guest on georgianne.com, and he has a future map of the world, and I took the liberty of ordering it, and I'm not disappointed whatsoever. It's a fantastic map, and it shows the changes in the Earth, and obviously we have an opportunity to fix any of the negative changes that are impacting our Earth. You know, we have free will. We all have as Daniel says, we're empowered because we're spiritual beings, very empowered, and there's things we can do. So I want to take this opportunity to introduce you to climateprotect.org, if you're not familiar with that website. They have the Alliance for Climate Protection. You can get on their email list. The great thing about this website is that you can talk to your state representatives, to the government. They will fix the email for you. All you have to do is put your name and hit send, and it takes just a moment to let your government know how you feel about the way the pollution is affecting our Earth and what we can do to make changes. And there's one more link I want to tell you about, and that's earthlab.com. You can use the Earth Lab calculator. It takes about 3 minutes of your time, and you can get your ECP, that's your Earth Conservation Plan. And it teaches you how to make changes in your lifestyle that will make a huge difference in how we're affecting our environment. So I wanted to make sure to just give you that little bit of information, and I hope you'll take a moment of your time to visit those websites and to get more information about the way our planet is affected. And tonight, I am going to talk to Norman Ober, who is author of Anita's Heaven, and that is a book that I spent the holidays reading. Norman, thank you so much for being with me this evening.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed your book. You know, I make it my policy that when I have an author, I have to read their book, and I read your book, and I had a difficult time putting it down. It was really intriguing.
Well, I'm delighted to hear that.
You were hoping so, weren't you? You know, for our audience members that aren't familiar with you, Norman, why don't you give them a little background about you?
All right, I can attempt that. The background, of course, is in the introduction to the book, and tells about a person who was born in Boston, Massachusetts, in 1919, which would make 89 years old at this time. And that's what I am. Background is that I was educated in Boston. I graduated from the Boston Public Latin School. 2 years later, I was in New York seeking my fortune, actually seeking a dramatic school that had good policy on scholarships. Well, I never made it to drama school. I got a job with a marionette company. And they sent me, from the east coast of the Mississippi River and from the Canadian border down through Florida in road shows, essentially, that were played mainly in schools. And I got a good background there, voice changing, because we all played multiple parts, hiding behind the proscenium there. All the audiences heard were our voices. Well, from there, I got back into, I met Peter in, it escapes me at the moment, but I met her in 1941, thereabouts. And when I saw her, I fell in love with her, and I decided I didn't want to go out on the road anymore. So instead, I went to work looking for a job in New York, and was shortly thereafter employed at WCBS Radio, which flagged state of the Columbia Broadcasting System, now known as the CBS Network. I worked there I expected to work there a year and somehow get myself connected with a writing operation.
So writing was your first love?
Well, writing was my second love. I have to say, I thought I was an actor.
Ah.
And I did some acting in Boston, and I did some radio acting in New York. But I found out very quickly that I was not the best doubler around, doubling being voice change. And therefore, I had to look elsewhere. I was getting work, but I was being called after the ones they really wanted were not available. And I decided to turn to writing. I did. I wrote a number of freelance radio dramas back in the old days, Manhattan at Midnight, Stars Over Hollywood, and other long-forgotten titles. And I got to do a series called Adventures of Admiral Byrd. I wrote the entire series, and I acted in some of them. It was the only way I could make any money out of that series, was to act in it as well as write it. And it didn't pay very much, but it gave me a lot of experience, a lot of fun. I moved on from it eventually. After World War II, I connected up with the Columbia Broadcasting System and started in what was to be a year's employment that went on for over 25 years.
Wow.
I moved from the station to the network as a writer, as an executive, and ultimately moved on out to the PolyGram Corporation, the Olympus Camera, and various other organizations, where I guess the pinnacle of my career was the vice presidency of public relations at the PolyGram Corporation.
Wow.
But the whole rest of my life was a pinnacle, because I was back from the war, and Anita and I just adored each other, and life seemed awfully much more important when, if you look at it through another pair of eyes besides your own.
Right.
We had a wonderful life, and I still have a wonderful life, because, as the book tells you, I'm still in touch with her.
That's fantastic. You know what I really appreciated about your book is, going back to your background a little, is that if there was an opportunity, you really embraced every opportunity that you were able to get.
Well, I suppose so. I was a very ambitious kid and very determined to make good. I saw myself as a latter-day Tom Swift, mm-hmm. who was going to come down and win the world. And while that never happened, I won everything in the world that I needed to be happy.
Right.
And my one terrible setback was Anita's death.
Right. Now, before we get further into that, because I want to let the audience know that you confirmed that you've always considered yourself an atheist.
Yes.
So, was that due to your family background? Is that something you learned, or is that something you decided on your own, or how did that come about?
I more or less learned it. When I, at the ripe old age of 12 or so, had a brother who was just a year older than me, my brother Harold, and he and I did a great deal of listening as our older brothers, Ralph and Emil, and our older sister, Doris, invaded on the subject of socialism and on their theory that there was no God. And we listened to it. We talked it over between ourselves, and we never quite bought it until, a few years later, we looked at each other and we decided they were probably right.
Wow.
That was the beginning of my education in atheism, if you will, and it lasted until after Anita died. 3 years, in fact.
Wow. Prior to your channeling with Anita, as an atheist, what do you think could have happened to have convinced you otherwise that God really did exist? Was there anything that you could have experienced besides your channeling sessions with Anita that would have convinced you otherwise?
Well, it was mainly the first 14 months of our channeling, during which I really felt I'd gone crazy, that I was writing to myself somehow.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time 14 months of these messages passed, I realized from their very content and from things that were being said that I couldn't possibly have made up, especially references to heaven and God.
Mm-hmm.
And finally I figured, well, there must be a God.
So before this, there's nothing that you can conceive of, that could have happened in your life that would have changed your mind. I mean, you were a devout atheist, is I guess my point.
I don't know if the devout is the way, but I was an avowed atheist.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly was a convinced atheist.
Right.
I had been through a lot of early years in Boston when, as a Jew, I was considered a second or possibly third-class citizen,
mm-hmm.
and I'd been exposed to a great deal of anti-Semitism, and I just decided for myself that whatever they said, there was no God telling them to do that.
Right.
And I realized and felt very strongly that, that if there was a God, things would be different here on Earth.
Right.
But at the end of 14 months, I said, accepted that God indeed was real, and in fact, Anita was the first to upbraid me on the subject.
And I'm bringing that up again only because I know for myself, when I have a belief system, it's not easy to crack it.
Not at all.
Especially from the time you're so young. I mean, from 12 years old, this was something you were conceiving at that time. So you're talking more than most of your life, or more than half your life, I should say.
I don't think it's quite half.
I was going to say, it's been quite a long time. You've
long time.
Exactly.
To argue, she believed in God. I did not. Well, I couldn't make an atheist out of her, but she made an atheist out of, she made a believer out of me.
Right. And it's amazing that your marriage, you know, survived your polar differences as far as religion was concerned.
Well, I think the answer to that is that If you truly love one another, that comes first.
Right.
And
right.
All the differences follow, whatever they are, and appear in time.
Yeah, that's amazing. Now, I want to talk to you a little bit about the pulsing that you discussed in the book. You said after Anita died, it took 3 years. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, because this is your life and you know better than I do, but it was 3 years before you started feeling any kind of a indication that Anita was getting in touch with you. Is that correct?
That's correct. But the first process was manifested itself during a weekend releasing set of Doc and Ruth Lindwall, who were wonderful people, who had invented this system. They would bring people together and pair them off, and over an entire weekend there would be the releasing by way of you question them, they question you, ultimately a great deal of truth emerges, and if there are people who are in trouble during those sessions, Doc and Ruth were there, and so were their aides and assistants. And it was a remarkably illuminating experience for me. I went into it with complete skepticism, and only because my two daughters got on me and said, you have to do something for yourself, or you'll be in worse trouble as time goes on. I guess I was pretty morose and not very forward to any day from the day before until this all began.
Well, you know what really intrigues me about that is most people that I've spoken to that are open to, you know, they're open from the beginning to a circumstance or a situation, but you went in not open at all.
Oh, that's absolutely true. I say somewhere in that book that under no circumstances could I have a book like this before all of it began to happen. And so, that's true. Well, you'd have to know, Anita, you'd have to be receiving these messages and increasingly know that this was indeed Anita. Everything about it was Anita. Mm-hmm. Every nuance, every accent, every tone, it was like sitting there and talking to her.
Wow.
But the pulsing in the beginning was the first that we made contact.
Mm-hmm.
And that was at this release session when on the second day of the weekend, I began feeling, I've always described it as pulsing, a kind of a beat right at my midriff. And I did not identify it anything I'd ever experienced before. And it occurred to me in the middle of that, could this be a signal from Anita?
Wow. See, I would have first thought indigestion. For me, I'd have thought I ate something wrong. Something is happening here. But you immediately knew.
I didn't immediately know, but during the session, it sort of filtered through to me that this might be the case.
Interesting.
I got proof of it that day. It was just something that happened, and I had a strong impression on my way back to New Jersey that I was going to hear from her again, if that was indeed she. And indeed I did, and I began hearing from her quite regularly, about once a week, this pulping would come.
And she knows you're tough. I mean, she knew all the time this was going to be tough to get you, to convince you, I'm sure, having lived with you as many years and knowing how you feel. She probably knew she would have to do some dramatic things to get your attention.
Yeah, well, her phrase for me was pragmatic Pete. She knew that I was a stubborn guy, and I felt much more secure dictating to her than having her dictate to me.
Right.
But all that broke down in that period of time, and until the pulsing stopped, we had worked out that one pulse meant yes, two pulses meant nothing, and no pulse at all meant no. It took me a while to get there, but I did. And then we began with a kind of a yes and no series of exchange to talk about her and what she was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it very, very restricting. I couldn't ask her, how do you look? What are you doing there? Or anything like that. I couldn't figure out a way to do it except get a yes or a no answer.
Your curiosity was not being fulfilled.
No, it was not. Well, what happened was, eventually, that pulsing peaked out. And what I learned from Anita was that it de-energized her. It took too much of her energy to create the pulse within me.
Mm-hmm.
And that we would have to find another way. And I went searching for it. In the end, what we found was automatic writing. Now, that came to me only because a woman named Ellen Greaves, who had written a book called The Testimony of Light, that book fell in my hands when my daughter Dodie took me to Padded Cover Bookstore in Denver to look for some material on pulsing. We found nothing on pulsing, but here was automatic writing, which is also channeling. And I took the book home, and I read it, and I became convinced that it could be true. In any event, whether I was totally convinced or not, I was determined that if this lady could have it happen, maybe I could too. And it was something to do, something to keep me in touch with Anita in the only way that I could. Well, in time, I discovered that the experience she had with an Anglican nun who had passed on came back to me with Anita at the other end. And we began this communication, which I totally doubted. I just simply didn't believe it. What was going on here was I was making all this up and putting words in her mouth as well as my own that gave us a relationship. That went on until I simply couldn't doubt anymore. And that's when I began to change to a believer.
Right. Because, you know, a lot of people would have been tempted to just find a medium or someone else that could do that work, but I was really inspired by the fact that you wanted to do it for yourself.
Well, it was a question of want, I suppose. I have since seen a few mediums, particularly one in Denver, and had some of what's gone on validated. But at the same time, when I began, I didn't have the feeling that I was going to succeed. I didn't know where it was going to take me, or if it was taking me anywhere. Mm-hmm. I think that's the important thing in the genesis of my particular experience. I didn't set out to teach myself how to do this. It was, in fact, Anita who found me. I was reaching out. I was calling out her name at night and spending a good part of every night just trying to will her to come to me. Mm. And in that sense, that's exactly what happened. She got instruction in channeling in heaven and began using that instruction to try and find my frequency with her.
Right.
And one day she found it, and that was the beginning.
Was that your big aha moment, Norman? Was that the moment where you said, oh my God, this is it? This is really her. I mean, what was that moment like for you when you had this epiphany, aha moment that this was real? And how did that feel to you?
Well, the epiphany came 14 months later. In the very beginning, I honestly didn't believe anything was going on here, but was something I was doing myself.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was a sort of natural progression from being an atheist, which I still was. I wasn't ready to jump with an aha. I wish I had. I would have believed it sooner and been a lot happier. But the fact is that I didn't really believe that first letter he wrote me was about two or three lines.
Mm-hmm.
And it simply said, I'm here, and we can do this again, and a few little things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And she thought he was real. I didn't believe it, but it was the best. It was the best game in town, but I was not going to abandon it. And I stayed with it, and eventually it all came about. My aha came down when I said, my God, there is a God. And my God, this wonderful wife of mine has been writing to all this time. And I did a great deal for myself by being able to do the task of getting down what she had to tell me without any more doubt.
Right, right. What do you think surprised you the most? I mean, you know, I'm going to get back just a little bit before I get to this next question, but, you know, there was a moment where she gave you information about a friend in one of your channeling sessions, and you verified that to be true.
Yes, that's so, the way that happened. And Anita herself said at the beginning that she was not pregnant, that there was... She couldn't see. She was, ahead. But that she simply was recording what was going on around her.
Right.
And in relation to the friend, it's almost the only time in the book that I had an experience with something that hadn't happened. That I didn't know had happened, let me put it that way.
Right, right.
I had a mutual friend named Ilya Pelik. And she was a Hungarian lady and a very dear friend of Anita's and mine. And she had gone to heaven since. But in those days, after she died, I began driving her down to her summer place, her winter place in Florida, and staying a week and then going back. I would then go back and get her when she was ready to come back to White Meadow Lake. Drive her home.
Mm-hmm.
And we would talk a great deal, and described to me, well, what actually happened was that Nita asked me if I could get and either to find out if Leslie was there, that's her husband. He was a famous composer in Hungary and had done some wonderful work in the world. And I tried. And so Anita reported to me in a subsequent message, well, I have found Leslie, but I ran into a man named Julius who hangs out where the musical people generally like to congregate. And he said Leslie is teaching, but that he will tell him that you're looking for him. And that's what indeed happened. Well, I relayed this to Nelia, and she just gasped. She said, that was his first violinist at the Chevito, a restaurant where he played in New York. They had roving violinists and operatic and gypsy music for a very upscale audience. Mm-hmm. And the fact was that Anita had put her finger right on the first evidence that I had that there was more going on here than I could possibly make up myself.
See, that's why I was wondering if that was maybe your aha moment. You know, if
well,
that
it
was
may have been, because what happened was it certainly was for Anita and may have been for me too in a smaller way, but I never regarded myself as convinced yet. But what Nelia did, she immediately got on the telephone, called back to New York, I guess, and she found out that Juliet had died. Mm. She did not know that. And she found out that he had died some months ago, and that he must indeed be in heaven if he was anywhere. So that was a great surprise to both of us, and I was jubilant because it was proof. This is all real.
Right. See, that would have been it for me. If I was able to get verifiable proof, something that I didn't know or was not in my mind whatsoever, I was thinking during that book, I said, I wonder if that's the point where Norman said, this is it. This is how I know this is real.
I wish I had done it because it would have put me on the right road sooner. But the truth of the matter is I was one very opinionated, stubborn guy, as all my dear friends would tell you.
Well, the ones who I'm that alive. Way too. So.
Very hard to convince, and it was a slow going for me.
Right.
But again, I attribute it to the really beautiful presence of my dear wife in heaven, mm-hmm. that it happened at all.
And the fact is that you weren't studying metaphysics of any kind, religion of any kind. You weren't studying anything to have any preconceived ideas or information that you could have been relaying in this book.
Before it happened, once I became convinced that, and reading like a fiend, I hadn't decided yet that there was a book in any of this, and I began reading Deepak Chopra and a great many others who shed a little light for me on what their thoughts of heaven were. Mm-hmm. All fortified me as time went on. But my moment of truth, my moment of aha, as you put, that was 14 months in, mm-hmm. to the experience of hearing from Anita beginning 3 years after her death. And it's gone on ever since. We still communicate.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that, too, in just a moment. For those of you that are just tuning in, I am speaking to Norman Ober, who is the author of the book Anita's Heaven. Norman, is there anything about those channeled messages that you may even have a shadow of a doubt about? I mean, you still think, God, you know, I'm having a hard time with that one.
Well, there were a number of things that I had a hard time with at the time that I got them. And my doubts all gave, once they gave way, it seemed to me that I had been privileged to discover something, mm-hmm. and I went with it.
So you're kind of an all or nothing guy. You're either going to believe it or you're not.
Well, I'm afraid that's the truth.
Well, I think a lot of us are that way. I mean, once you got convinced, you were dedicated to the process and to the information. I think that's amazing.
Well, I'm a much more reasonable human being now than I ever was before. And it's my experiences with it after her death that I attributed to.
Now, how do your daughters feel about this amazing transition you went through?
Oh, they are absolutely delighted. They never stop teasing the things that I used to say.
Are they saying, say hi to Mom for me?
I beg your pardon?
Do they ask you to say hi to Mom for them?
Oh, yes. They believe this is so.
Oh, of course.
We're both spiritually inclined, as indeed their mother was. But the girls even more so.
Right.
They followed paths that have been spiritual all their lives. And they are two wonderful women. They're both social workers. One dealing with mental illness, and the other one dealing with hospice patients.
Ah.
And there's no money in that field, but they enjoy what they're doing and wouldn't do anything else.
Well, very caring and loving girls, obviously.
They are indeed. Oh, they are happy as could be about all this.
Oh,
they also,
sure.
I think it was Amy who said, this has saved you from insanity.
Right. Well, I think you were mentioning they're the ones that helped you pursue finding these answers and the books to help you with your automatic writing. I mean, they truly supported you in that way. I think that's amazing.
They supported me.
Wow.
And I just heard from my older daughter, who's in Hawaii right now, who had to call me the minute they got relaxed from the balcony of her hotel room in Waikiki overlooking the ocean. And she was happier than I had heard her in years at Beach Bash. Just like her mother, she loved the ocean, and she has seen a great deal more of it than her mother ever did. But my daughter is the same way. She's not as bound to ocean as Dodie is, but at the same time, she loves water and has to be near water, mm-hmm. and the two of them connect up with it, and they certainly have connected me back up with it.
Right. Now, I don't want to give the entire book away, because obviously I want everyone to take the time to read it as I did, but there were some things I would love to go deeper in discussion with you, Norman.
Go to it.
I thought it was really interesting about the diet that people eat in heaven. I mean, for those of you that think food's not necessary, obviously it is still necessary.
Well, it's necessary in a special way. You're talking about the food in heaven.
Right.
Yeah. It's necessary the same that gasoline is necessary in an automobile. The light body which issued to the naked soul which arrives in heaven, the body is gone. And in order to create temporary people, light bodies are assigned. Now, those are more or less mechanical devices,
mm-hmm.
and the best thing you can do with them is lubricate them. So a lot of the diet is liquid. But on the other hand, because God and the people who work with him realized people needed to crunch something with their teeth, they create various other things, crackers, breads, and so on, that could be crunched and would at the same time dissolve in the system.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the light body doesn't have any more organs than it absolutely needs to function in heaven. That is to say, there is no, there are no sexual organs because there are no birth in heaven. There are no elimination organs because there is nothing to eliminate. As gasoline is up, so does everything that's put into into the stomach, if you will, of the light body. And that's what food is all about. I think Anita refers to it at one time as shopping in the no-frills aisle of a supermarket. There's nothing really fancy. There are no restaurants. You can't go out and get a steak or anything like that is hard to break down or impossible to break down. What you can get and what eat and drink is everything that it's possible to use up in the process of maintaining the light body.
Right.
And I think lubricating is just the right word for it.
Yeah, that does sound appropriate. So it's really just to keep it functioning, just like a well-oiled machine.
Exactly.
What
if they get some sexual organs in heaven, I think there would be a movement on the part of the customers to try and use them.
Right.
That's not the design of heaven. The design of heaven is to take all souls, whether they're good people or bad, and purify them and give them relaxation, to teach them and to especially make them ready for reincarnation.
So they're able, and that was, I'm sure that was a tough nut to crack for you, the reincarnation idea.
Well, by the time I got to that, it wasn't such a hard thing to swallow, because I had already swallowed so much that was new to me and found out that I could digest it. I understand the drift of your aha and your epiphany, but I wish I could say that I had it, but I didn't. Everything, once it started, it came very naturally.
Mm-hmm.
Once it began to feel right, it was right enough so that I didn't question it, and I was very busy in the beginning writing her messages on a paper pad. And that took all my energies to try and write clearly enough to be able to read them.
Right.
That paper pad came in after the pulping ended, mm-hmm. and it was before I learned that I could do it on computer. Once I got on computer, I could relax, write a longer letter, and really enjoy what I was doing.
Exactly.
About it afterward when I reread it.
Now, and you were also discussing in the book about how everyone has a home. Nothing different than what we have here, for the exception of the fact that it will expand, contract as needed. That's kind of nice.
Well, yes, it's very utilitarian. Anita has explained to me that at one point her apartment expanded, and she said she felt that was in anticipation of my coming.
Wow.
But she said she didn't have any clues that I was on my way, and didn't suppose that had anything to do with it.
Ah.
This is what happens. If families come up and they want to live together, the accommodation will accommodate them. It will grow.
Interesting. So, for lack of a better term, all needs are completely met.
All needs in heaven are completely met.
Right.
And the people give evidence of that by being extremely happy, without reservation. There's no jealousy, there's no greed, there's no, if you can have it, I want it too, there's no hatred, and heaven is real.
That is heaven, isn't it?
Play.
That really is heaven. I mean, that is amazing, where there's no competition, there's no envy, jealousy, there's no reaction and fear.
Yeah, and there's no class distinction, there's no color bias. And there's no bias. People do think differently.
Wow.
Like the gay and the lesbians.
Mm-hmm.
They live completely unhampered lives during their time in heaven. And I think Anita pointed out at one time that they were a little slower than the rest of us to leave heaven.
Does that mean, am I to assume that if someone chooses, or if someone is homosexual, that they're going to choose that the other lifetimes that they choose to have? I mean, or is that something they can choose? Is that a choice, or is that something that they're born with from the beginning?
Well, I don't know. I don't think any of us know.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously something in the chemistry of the body that makes the opposite sex either something unreal or just anathema.
Right.
And the only one of the sex to turn to. And some of those relationships are beautifully loving,
mm-hmm.
and some of them to beset by the interferences of society have a chance to succeed.
And I guess I just asked that because I was under the impression from some earlier reading that I've done that we sometimes choose to be either male or female when we reincarnate in different lives. So I was wondering that about the sexuality as well.
Well, as a matter of fact, the choice of sex is a right on leaving. You can not only choose your sex, but you can choose where you want to go, and in many cases, what family you want to be a part of. Mm. Obviously, with your own family, well along into heaven itself, or in heaven, you have to select a younger generation. But mostly, people try to connect up with teens and try to connect up with some young couple who are anxious to have children. And the mischief comes in when a couple not anxious to have children become pregnant. And as Anita points out in one point in the book, the fetus who is designed to go to them is capable of changing its mind and creating abortion that sends it back to heaven. Now, that's a pretty far-out concept, mm-hmm. but I've lived with it a while, and I find that it makes sense that a fetus might very well be able to detect in its own rudimentary way that the atmosphere between a husband and a wife is such that either disinterest or abuse or anything that's negative is what's awaiting them.
So the expression, you can pick your friends, but you can't pick your family, isn't really true.
I think so.
Now, another, you dedicate a lot of time to the fact that there are different universes, that this is not the only one. And I think a lot of us, innately, we know that. We're not the only living beings, you know, in the galaxy and the universe. But you're saying there are different universes. We may be the only living planet in this universe, but you're suggesting there have been as many as 10.
There still are as many as 10, but one of them is no longer peopled. That's a whole nother story.
Right.
The answer is that I expressed interest when she started telling me about universe. I said, can you get me some information on them? Because that was about then that I decided there was going to be a book, which pleased her. So she and her mother and her father descended on various records facilities, and they dug out sort of baby capsules of what each universe was about, and each has one peopled planet, no more than one to a universe. So you're quite right. There are other living beings. Now, I have often thought that this business of universe versus universes may be a question of definition. In heaven, they call them separate universes, and they have created firewalls between them so that one universe can't communicate with another. And that apparently is done because none of the universes are perfect. None of the peopled planets in those universes are perfect. A great many are more imperfect than otherwise, and the idea is to keep them separated until God, his workers, figure out how to make the peopled planet in one universe perfect, mm-hmm. just like it is in heaven. And once they do that, Anita speculates, they'll probably do that in each one of the other peopled planets until all the universes can be opened up to one another.
Very interesting. Now, there is one universe that we were just speaking of that is no longer peopled. And can you tell our audience the reason for that?
Well, yes. They were a very advanced civilization in many ways. They were even more advanced than we are on Earth by a considerable distance. They had mastered the sky. They had mastered rocketry, and they certainly had mastered the uranium pill. And with all their advanced methods, that particular peopled planet had turned into a kind of a police state. Everybody was either a worker or someone who ran the police state, and there were no grades in between. And the people were very well educated in many sophisticated industries that existed there, and slowly but surely, a number of them decided that they were not going to live this way, that they were not going to be under a police state where all they did was go home and eat, come back and work, whether they were in science or in more mundane occupation. They just weren't going to stand for it. Mm-hmm. And little by little, as the book explained, these people began disappearing. And soon whole families were disappearing. And the leadership recognized that something was going on that was not good for them. So they began searching for them and began leaning hard on people who were left behind to find out what they knew. And a whole cruelty regime set in, out-and-out cruelty. And in the meantime, more and more people disappeared until the day came that a message was left, or a series of them, in a focal point of the government, explaining that the forces were in array now to wipe them out if they didn't surrender and make peace and permit them to change the world to a more ethical and peaceful place. Well, the response to that was a series of atomic raids. And on one particular day, they covered a blanket of the space with atomic bombs, and the result far exceeded their intention. And the firestorm enveloped virtually all of the civilized portions of that world.
So, I guess I'm speaking for... I'm comparing to our planet. We have a lot of work to do, obviously. And so I'm thinking about that peopled planet, and I'm looking at ours, and so as much as we can do to help make our existence easier... and to take care of the planet that we've been given. I mean, we do have a lot of work to do, and that's why I guess I've been following so much about climate control and about what's happening to our Earth. And so do you feel that there is something we can proactively do to protect our planet?
I think we have to do something proactively. Mm-hmm. We have to go to work not only on the environment around us, but the environment in general, and especially... we have to go to work on our so-called representatives in Congress, right, and the president.
So we need to really speak up and act out about the things that are important to us and the way we want to live and our climate. And so that's why that's what I took away from that part of your book about the universes.
Well, it's a valid point. I think that this coming election, which is still a long way off, if these candidates... who want to be president don't come out four square without evasion and promise that they're going to do something substantive and explain what that substantive is, then we should vote for them.
Exactly. Exactly. I think we do need to get much more proactive about that. So your book kind of validated that point for me as well. You know, we don't have a whole lot more time, and I want to give you the opportunity to tell us more about the channeled messages that you've received that from Anita since this book has been printed and published. Was there anything in particular that you felt was important to discuss about any additional messages you've received?
Well, I think I could give some quotations right from the book, if that's what you have in mind.
Well, I mean, I know that since the book was published, you've still been in communication with Anita.
Oh, yes. Well, the information is much looser than it used to be. Mm-hmm. Anita declared herself ready when we agreed that we would write the book, right from what I had up to that point. She breathed a great sigh of relief.
Oh.
And the letters... since then, have been loving letters. They have teased me. They have upbraided me mildly. Mm-hmm. And she has told me stories about people in heaven and what they do and what they think and feel. And there hasn't been, she said herself one time, I said, there must be more that you're not telling me. And she said, really, I think you have all that you can use in a book. And if I keep pouring it at you, it'll keep you writing the book forever.
Right, because this was a labor of love for you. It took, 13 years to complete it?
Yes, it's a labor of love, one that I at no time regret.
No.
I'm very happy to have brought her message out to the world, or at least that portion of it, represented by the people who read the book.
Yes, and I'm really happy that you did it as well. How have you changed your day-to-day life as a result of the book? What do you feel like you're doing differently?
Well, I'm getting older, for one.
Well, yeah, we can all do that.
Yeah. My life has changed in a number of ways, but I spend a good deal of time at the computer exchanging messages with her, and still do that. My life has changed in that the book exists, and that it suffers a few handicaps because it's been self-published. I'm sure you are aware of that.
Oh, sure.
And so I have to do what I can do to bring the book to public attention.
Mm-hmm.
In my search for readers who will then tell other readers to buy the book.
Absolutely.
That little tidal wave, once it starts, will do the job for me. But it hasn't started. It's been rolling very slowly. I do, on the other hand, get some great letters from readers who like the book and like it strongly enough to have written that fact.
Right.
I won't take the time now to read you things that they have said to me, but I will read one of them. And the writer's name is Norman Corwin, whom I knew years ago. And he was they used to call him the fair-haired boy of Golden Age radio. He was the most creative writer, director, and producer in the industry's history. And he'd written about 17 books. He knows good writing when he sees it. I had written him about the book earlier, and he never answered me, so I said, well, he doesn't like the idea. Then I sent him a copy, and by gosh, he called up. And this is what he said to me. He says, it's open, honest, and exceptionally well written. There's 1,000 cuts above it, self-published book I've read.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is the highest praise that I could get, the one that means the most.
Well, I don't read. I mean, I love reading, obviously, but it was not hard to continue reading it. It was not hard to pick it up. I continued reading it until I was finished, and so I have to agree with him. It was a very good read, and it was very interesting. And some things I was like, really? Okay, something I hadn't heard before. I mean, we've all heard of the book Conversations with God. We've all heard of other books giving channeled information, but this was really quite different. I mean, this is over a course of 13 years, and you know, a person's perspective, even near-death experience, they only get so far in the death experience before they come back, and they can't give the perspective that Anita's able to give.
Well, she has decided, well, we have decided, that she's going to wait for me, and when I come, we are going to remain in heaven for as much time as it's possible to be there,
mm-hmm.
so that we can serve God in some way. I have to atone for all my atheism. There has no such atonement, but she's very happy there and will be very happy if I am.
Right.
Most of the time, the pressure comes from one or the other of the mates who join heaven to go back. Mm-hmm. Well, we don't have that pressure over us, and God willing, we'll be there. I don't suppose for eternity, but I hope that it will at least make it unnecessary for me to lose Anita again and find her 20-odd years or so into another life.
Right. Well, I'm sure she doesn't want to spoil everything for you. She wants you to have some experiences of your own and not just of her.
Well, that's absolutely true. She demurred any time I tried to push in some new direction since we decided that I had all the material I was going to work with.
Yeah. That was fantastic that you came together to write this book. Now let's talk a little bit too, because we're nearing the hour here, and I want to give you the opportunity to tell our audience how they can read more about you and your book, and how they can purchase your book if they're interested, which I highly recommend it. So do you want to give them that information, Norman?
We ready for that now?
Sure.
All right. Well, the book, of course, titled Anita's Heaven, and it exists in reality in my own home and at my publisher's. My publisher is actually the man who helped me publish it. And he has an organization called Blooming Twig Books. His editorial work on my book was excellent. At any rate, to buy the book, all you have to do is email info at Blooming Twig Books, all one word, BloomingTwigBooks.com. And that will put you on a path to ordering the book. Having gotten my commercial out of the way, I have to tell you that you can find a good deal more at the website www.anitaheaven.com. www.anitaheaven.com. That tells you a great deal about the book, and it also tells you how to order it if you want to. It tells you a lot about Anita and me and some of our experience. And you can find out more if you simply Google the name Norman Ober or Yahoo the name Norman Ober. And there's plenty of information there. I certainly hope that with a fine reception you've given me persuades some people to take a chance on the book.
Absolutely. It was a very good read, Norman. Again, the publisher, it's a self-published book, and the publisher is Blooming Twig Books. And you can email info@bloomingtwigbooks.com, or better yet, even go to anitasheaven.com. And it's a beautiful website, and you can look over the information. There's a beautiful picture of Anita, and a great picture of you too, Norman.
Well,
you were definitely going to a soiree or something. You have a really, in a tuxedo. Love that.
When that was taken, and when the Blooming Twig Books people asked for a picture, I looked at what I had, and everything was either sloppy or informal, and there, by golly, was this picture of a wedding that we'd been at.
Now, Anita's picture, she looks like a little movie starlet in that picture.
Well, she was just absolutely glorious.
She's a beautiful woman.
Perfect reflected beauty that came from within.
Mm-hmm. And you can see that even in her photo. You can look at it and tell that beautiful inside and out. And I do recommend this book, and I hope everyone will give it the opportunity. This is a wonderful read. I've read it over the holidays, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. It gave me a lot of food for thought, Norman.
Well, I hope it is others the same.
And, you know, just so the audience knows, next week I'm having Jeannie Clock on, who is an automatic writer, because I want to keep with the discussion and the theme we have going here, Norman, about automatic writing. So I've invited Jeannie Clock to come, and she is going to talk to us and teach us how to do automatic writing for ourselves.
Well, I suppose I could have done that, but I didn't, and I'm glad that she is coming by to do it.
Yeah, well, I wanted to talk to you about your book. Look, an hour went by, and we probably still could have talked another hour about it.
I never run out of talk on my book.
Oh, well, I wanted to give you the opportunity to discuss the book in further detail. So Jeannie's going to pick up where you left off and teach everyone how to do automatic writing.
That's great.
And so we're going to keep with the theme a little bit and kind of support the book and what you've done so far. So I want to thank everyone for being here this evening. Norman, thank you so much.
It's my pleasure.
For being here and for discussing your book, Anita's Heaven. Again, if anyone would like to sign up for email updates, go to georgian.com. That's GEORGIANN.com. And you can click on the newsletter link, and you can get email updates every week about who's on the show, what is going on with our previous guests also. If you're on MySpace, you can find me on MySpace at Georgianne K, And sign up to be a friend, and you'll also get updates as well. Again, thank you, Norman, for being here, and I want to thank our audience, and we'll see you next week, and we're going to learn how to do automatic writing. Good night.
Good night.